Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
And the joy continues, friends. 35 Irish athletes will be taking part in the Paralympic Games, which starts on the 28th of August until the 8th of September. And our guests this morning are both former Paralympians, are going to be commentating on some of the events for RTÉ Sport. Their cyclist, Peter Ryan, who's in studio. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Oliver. How are you?
And runner Michael McKillop's on the phone, and we'll come to Michael shortly. Peter, you're very welcome to the studio here. When did you take part in the Paralympics?
I was at the 2016 Rio Games, but involved, I suppose, in Paralympic sport for a good 8 to 9 years on the kind of high performance world championship side of things.
So, and you're a proud Tipperary man.
I am indeed, yeah.
You were a hurler. Was that your kind of first interest in sport?
Yeah, once upon a time, I suppose, before disability kicked in, I would have played a lot of hurling, football, soccer. Very, I suppose, quintessential Tipperary upbringing. Reared with a hurley in your hand. But
if you're not on a horse, you need a hurley in your
hand. Basically, yeah, something to that effect. So yeah, no, that shaped me and life was good.
Were you good at hurling?
I'm getting better the more longer I'm retired, Oliver. I was playing at a decent level, I suppose. Yeah, I played with Tip underage and played as high as I could at the time. But would I have went on? Who knows? But yeah, it kind of gets romanticised a little just because, I suppose, when a thing gets taken away from you.
I know. And what age were you when it was?
I was 19, 20. So, you're in the prime. I was playing senior at the club. I'd wore blue and gold a few times. Life was good. So, it's easy lament, and it's one of the things that, can make you bitter. You can say, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that. But, I played soccer at a high level as well. I was delusional. I was telling myself I should have been in the Premiership. It's who knows where I'd have been.
Yeah, but you have to believe those things, don't
you?
Sports,
100%. Yeah. And look, it's part of the heart, and it stops you kind of dealing with it because you start wishing and comparing and contrasting and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, got back into sport. And it
what,
was a
what
big,
happened to you?
What, from a disability point of view, or getting back in? So I lost 80 to 90% of my eyesight. I got a condition, Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. And yeah, I was 19, 20, so it was a big game changer. Working in building sites, playing sport, driving cars, very normal life, and then had to obviously do a bit of a flip. And that wasn't, it's too simplistic, say it took a quick turn and went the other way.
Devastating.
Yeah, I gave 2-3 years trying to figure this out and trying to get my head around it. And I suppose there is no getting your head around it, but there is eventually you have to start moving on, though, and start parking certain things and talking about other things. And Joe, Emily touched on a lot of, I suppose, there'd be there in the previous interview, there'd be a lot of commonalities there and talking about your story, just getting and moving on. And yeah, found sport. And that was probably the first big domino in me kind of reinventing myself.
Look at you now, coming from Paralympics and talking with others. But what went on in the 3 years? How did you cope with it, or what did you do?
Oh, young Irish man, I drank on it. I didn't talk. I pushed people away. I was the worst iteration of myself for about a good 2 years. But good people, good support networks. Talk about country Ireland and laughing about the hurley in the hand. But I also had huge support networks in that. I had people that I was best friends with from 5 years of age that were all, they could see I wasn't happy. They were there trying to help and ready to pick you up when you were ready to kind of grab that hand. So yeah, I was very, very fortunate in a lot of ways. And the penny ultimately dropped and I kind of got back into sport. That was the one I said, I'm going to try use sport as that first little piece to reinvent myself.
And I think you were in college, were you, when you came upon the Paralympics and the idea behind it?
Yeah, I was. Well, it was one of these things, huge hang up about Paralympics and disability sport. And that was part of my acceptance journey. And that's not me, because I grew up able-bodied for whatever that means. And do you know what I mean? So I didn't identify with that world. And through talking, counselling, a lot of that kind of stuff, I realised, I need to get back into sport and drop some of these hang-ups that I have and whatever. But it came about, they were running an open day up in UCD. Paralympics were having a come and try event type thing. Mm-hmm. I just went, very open mind, said, I want to find a five-a-side game of soccer, some visually impaired lads, bust one of them up against the wall, think that I'm being myself again, try and get that sense of what I used to have.
Yeah.
And the whole thing just snowballed. I got taught into different sports, and the cycling squad told him about my background. I was telling him all the positive stuff. I wasn't telling him about what I'd been getting up to for a few years.
And good, good.
Yeah. But yeah, bit of potential here. And do you know what it was? I suppose I actually think the reason it became sustainable, I never cycled and it was a whole new experience and everything about it was a new lease of life and new shape on everything. And before I knew it, I was winning national titles and getting asked, would you get involved in a high performance squad and go to a world championships in Canada? And I was like, when you put down three utterly depressing years and then all of a sudden a year later, a year and a half, this stuff is happening. You just go with it. I wasn't thinking games. I wasn't thinking big picture. I was just smiling and I was like, yeah, let's do more of this.
Do you nearly have to go through 3 years of misery to understand how good life can be?
I think it would have been strange not to. Do you know that? And I kind of think there has, like, maybe it happened instantaneously with me where I just kind of devolved pretty quickly, but like when it happened, but like I think for it to happen, for you to transition too smoothly, I think it's going to happen eventually. Like you kind of have to go through that grief. It's like I was shedding who I was, and there was an awful lot that goes with that. So I think after, whether you have to or not, who knows? But I think once you have done that, you do appreciate everything and you savour it. And you might say you savour every moment, but until you've kind of been in that rock bottomy place, you jump. Who's to say what savouring it really is like?
Everything gets better. Yeah. But your story just tells us the story of the Paralympics, doesn't it? I mean, how important this is. And I'd imagine how ecstatic that is to perform, represent your country, having gone through what you went through at the Paralympics in Rio in 2016.
Yeah, like I laugh. Like I was in a treatment centre in 2012. I was in the Olympic Village in 2016. I was like these are very two different institutional buildings. But like it was that journey in that 4 year span. Like it was huge. It was huge for me. But the Paralympics as a whole, yeah, like you said, we're all high off the back of the Olympics and the fever pitch. But like you sprinkle in the disability element. You sprinkle in the life story. And we're actually only talking about backstage because look, fortunate enough, going doing a bit of punditry for the games coming up. But it's like, what are people interested in? And they like the backstories. They like the who the person is when they're not a world champion. Because sometimes that stuff is hard to identify with. But you're a normal lad from here and you're this and you're... Like, Joe, you know, I think that's the stuff that people really want to see is like the human element. And the Paralympics is just like very human.
It is. And you're a cyclist.
Yeah, cycling, running. I retired in 2020 from the cycling scene. Doing a lot of running the last few years, but yeah, I suppose I identify as a cyclist.
Yeah, but that's what you did in Rio, and it's tandem cycling.
Tandem
isn't
cycling,
it?
Yeah. So
is this? I think you describe it, don't you, as like the rowing teams that we're used to seeing at the Olympics?
Yeah, because the dynamic is you're an individual athlete, but it's a team sport within an individual sport. I was saying it before, like you throw in the disability element, like Paul O'Donovan can get out of that team boat and win a world championships on his own. Right. Essentially a visually impaired blind athlete, he's so reliant on that guy in the front because it's like it's empowering him to be the best cyclist he can be. And but yes, you know, he's putting everything into it. It's a real rare team, and you sprinkle in, I would say, like we go in a training camp, you're visually impaired, so you're probably reliant on that person. You're going around 24/7. The dynamic is a super rare sporting one where without him, you don't even get to compete. You hardly get to train without that person. And so it's, do you know, but at the end of the day, the bike runs better with two people on it. It gives an individual sport, like you say, like sometimes it stops being about you. It's easier to fight for someone else in life. Do you know? And
I know what you mean. I
often like, do you know, me and Sean, any of the guys I raced with would have had a real tight relationship with him. And like, you probably want to quit last 3K into a 100-mile race. Do you know what I mean? They can be tough events. They can be, but like sometimes you just, or when it comes to going training, it's like, well, I know he's doing it. It's an accountability buddy. It's like, it's
ever. It's just you. Yeah. It's harder maybe sometimes to show up.
Well, that was my biggest, like going from team sports to an individual sport. That was a hard transition because I've played really well on a team and lost. I've played really bad and the team won. Do you know what I mean? So whereas
you'll always have the lads around.
Yeah. Whereas in an individual sport, I don't play well. I probably don't do well. Do you know what I mean?
I want to bring in Michael McKillop, who's on the line. Good morning, Michael.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Another Paralympian. Give us your history, because you've done a few games, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm privileged and lucky enough to represent the island in four Paralympic Games. I started my journey in Beijing in 2008 and retired in, just after Tokyo in 2021. So for me, it was a long journey and an amazing journey, and one that has fabulous memories, and I've met amazing people along the way.
And you have the medals to show for it as well.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a privilege to represent my country, and I think winning four medals, yes, it's amazing for me. But as Peter said, like it's the people around you, it's the team around you that have helped me. And yes, I'm an individual sport, but if it wasn't for my coach, my father, if it wasn't for my physio, with strength and conditioning coaches, the chef de mission, in all the games that I attended, the structure, the managers, you know, James Nolan. Who's still the manager of the athletics team, like it wouldn't have been possible. So I'm very, very lucky and blessed to have had the life, the privileged life that I've led. And I'm actually really excited to watch the Paralympic Games coming up in 2 weeks' time.
And you mentioned your dad was a coach. He kind of wanted to push you a little bit, didn't he, when you were younger?
Yeah, I think, for me, my life with a disability started at birth, and my diagnosis was 2 years and 10 months. And I think he learned a lot from having a disabled child. No parent in this world wants to have a child with a disability, but they used it alongside my mother, used it as a positive and tried to encourage me into every single thing that they possibly could. And they used sport as my physiotherapy at the time. And I grew up in a little town called Cushendall on the north coast of Antrim, and at the hurling town. And my dad was involved in the local hurling scene at the time, and kind of that was my first love. And then running took over from that, because my father was a runner in his day. And I think you just want to follow in the footsteps of the people that your role models are, the people you look up to. And for me, that was my mom and dad, who were both athletes. And I think you naturally fall into the thing that you kind of feel passionate about. And I'm very blessed and lucky enough to have fallen into a sport that allowed me to travel the world and give me those medals and give me those moments of standing on the podium and hearing Ron Levine and I'm walking away and seeing the smiles and the atmosphere that I created from winning that medal.
I mean, you've had extraordinary success. You have two gold medals, don't you? And a very unusual moment. Your mother got to present you with one of them.
Yeah, I luckily enough, I have four medals. So,
four goals, sorry.
Yeah, four from four games, but one in three games. I won double gold in London, like you kind of had said about my mother. And
yeah,
she had the lucky special moment to hand over an Olympic or Paralympic gold medal to me. And she was the first mother to ever present her child with an Olympic or a Paralympic gold medal.
What a moment.
And for me, that goes down as in my personal opinion, for me, the greatest moment of my career, because it was a moment of showing to the world that parents are vital to anyone with a disability. And they're the rock. And I think my mom had won because her son had accomplished so much. And she still is the only parent that's had that privilege of presenting their child with an Olympic or Paralympic gold medal. And for me, that will go down in history. And, and she's a very special woman.
Totally, totally unique. Michael, you also are very optimistic, aren't you, about the world and how we're changing, and we have the language and the vernacular and the attitude towards people with disability and visibility for them.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when you look at the bigger picture, we've had such an amazing Olympic Games. We've had amazing Olympic Games in the past, but to follow up and then the accomplished games in its whole, the Paralympic Games come off the back of the Olympic Games. And for me, it's a great opportunity to showcase 35 other elite athletes from this island at the biggest elite stage at the Paralympic Games. And we've had so many amazing accomplishments and medals from the Olympic Games this time round. And it's now, the way I look at it, Paralympics Ireland and the athletes of Paralympics, they got to step up to the plate. They got to show the nation that they're good enough to compete at the elite level. And I'm sure 100% that they're going to go out there and do the best they can and definitely bring some medals. But the most important thing is for the nation to get behind these athletes. Yes. And I think that for me is what I experienced getting more and more the older I became. So in 2008, it was a very small amount of people that would have recognized the Paralympic movement. But in Tokyo, you started to see the nation get behind the Paralympians. And I think it's now, when it's closer to home, it's in Paris, you're going to see a lot more Irish people with a lot of tricolours in the stadiums and getting the opportunity to travel to a major games. I think it's 100% now the time to really get behind and use the Olympics as the bounce and that we really need to see another group of athletes going and doing the best they can and win medals.
Well, it's going to be really special. It's going to be special for both of you, Peter and Michael, because you're going to be doing the punditry, the commentating for the first time. So this is a new experience. And Peter, you can come in this conversation as well, because we're looking ahead to these athletes. They've only got 2 more weeks left of preparation. Some of them are household names. Who should we be looking out for?
Well, definitely cycling-wise, I think Eve McChrystal and Katie, they'll be on the tandem female bike. Like, if she has a good game, she could come away with 3 medals.
Really?
Like, yeah, but she definitely wants that one in the time trial, road race time trial type setup. So, like, again, she's on the scene since London. This is going to be her 4 games. Who knows how many more are left? I think athletes become a bit more conscious when they're starting to get that stage. They want to take everything that's on the table. There's no, when you're young, you think this is going to last forever. I'm sure Michael can attest to that. And you think when you start getting to those final games, you know, right, you know, who knows what's ahead? So every race matters. And those ladies definitely have every chance of representing. So, but like that, the games throw up crazy results too, because Michael chime in here away, but without getting too into it, like, you've world championships, you have every nation sends all their best athletes, but say the way qualification points go, some of the events are smaller than others, typically at the games, just due to the amount of medals, this, that and the other. So, like, it's just going to throw up some crazy results, or there's going to be a young kid on the block that's just starting to come on the scene now, wasn't there 2 years ago. You throw in Ronan Grimes, great friend of mine, he's the world champion from 2022 in cycling. Like, he's a great chance of meddling in a road race. But I know there's been some reclassification of athletes in his event. So all of a sudden he went from being a world champion to now having new competition that he didn't even have last year on the scene. So it's like I say, there's a whole nuance to the disability piece as well. But I think they'll be hoping to try and do equal at least what the able-bodied games do. But Michael, you might have your pulse on the athletic scene a bit more than me.
Yeah, for me, across all sports, we have amazing opportunities of medals. We've got world champions, we've got European champions, we've got people that have just missed out on medals in Tokyo and other games. But for me, obviously, in the athletics, we have 5 going. 2 stalwarts, which is Greta Estrema Kida and then Ora Comerford. Like I said, Greta's been to 2 Paralympic Games so far and has finished 4th in both times. And Ora, unfortunately, hasn't had the best track record at Paralympic Games. Unfortunately, she's picked up a little knocks and niggles in Rio and in Tokyo. But these are the games where I believe Orla's going to come out of her shell and go to the next level. She's
great.
3rd in the world currently on time. She's just recently come out of a block of hard training in the build-up to these games. She broke 12 seconds for the 100 metres for the first ever time this season. And I think this is really her step, and this is an opportunity for her. But the likes of Mary Fitzgerald, who finished 7th in Tokyo, she's, I think, ranked higher than that now in the world. And you never know an outside chance of a medal. But even when you really put it in perspective, even like looking at the swimmers,
Ellen's
going to her 5th Paralympic Games.
That's Ellen Keane, yes, we all know her.
Ellen Keane, 5th Paralympic Games. She's won 2 medals. She's won a bronze in Rio. She's won a gold in Tokyo. And this is going to be her last Paralympic Games. So what a way it would go, amazing way to go out than winning a medal and saying goodbye, au revoir, whatever you want to say to elite sport at the Paralympic level. And then it would be amazing. And then obviously you've got the minority sports, as we would probably call. You've got the para-equestrian, or you've got the powerlifting. We've got a junior world champion from 2017. And then I guess
that's Brittany, isn't it?
For me personally.
And she's on her own.
And then the last, I personally believe that has a great opportunity would be Katie O'Brien, who is a rower. Mm-hmm. He comes from the same training group as the O'Donovan brothers, and she has a new partner, Tiernan. They're both world medalists in the build-up to these games. So I'm personally looking forward to these games and seeing it from a different perspective, because all I've had to do over my career is talk about myself and focus on myself and focus on the medals I want to win. But now it's going to be an amazing opportunity alongside other athletes and being pundits for RTE and like Peter said, like showcasing that to the nation and trying to get people engaged and telling the stories and hopefully get to hear Ron Levine a couple of times, and that would be very, very special.
Yeah, we look forward to listening to you both. Peter, can I ask you, obviously you're going to be commentating or doing punditry. How will it be described to you, or how do you find out what's going on?
Like most things in my life, Oliver, I'm going to figure it out as I go along the way. I've been asked to do a little bit of co-com stuff, and like, yeah, obviously there's an elephant in the room here, but I'm like, I think if I'm just kind of following the cues of the actual commentator, I'm like, you know, I think if I took on maybe a little bit of a different role, you were just talking about David Gillick there beforehand, but a lot of the real insight is personal experience. And like, once you can give that tidbit of even a mindset, what someone's going through, like you say, listening to Michael there, I think a factor we haven't spoke about in the games is like a lot of these athletes are in Tokyo with no crowds. We go to Paralympic events, which aren't as well followed, let's call it spade a spade, as some of the able-bodied world championships. Yeah. Like, there's going to be huge crowds in Paris. Mm-hmm. That's going to throw up murky results. Someone's going to react.
It
someone's
affects
going
things.
To, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. So yeah, I think, like, from that point of view, I've played at high levels. I think I can, you know, add my own little tidbits here and there. So
yeah, and a lot of punditry and commentary was to do with hearing the interviews afterwards, and because that was the most fascinating thing. Because often we complain about sports stars not really they're so coached that we don't hear the emotions or their personalities. It was different in the Olympics, we just heard. So presumably that's going to be the same.
Yeah, I think so. And the mix zone is a great, like, it's brilliant when you're like on top and obviously. But just getting that raw emotion and like you get to see the real side of it and what they've went through. So I think, look, the games, Michael said it himself, it's thrown a light on sports that we're not looking at all year round. So really, and there's that extra piece of, like say, the disability story, the backdrop, what it means to parents. Like, I think it's going to cover a multitude. Like, so
you're well qualified.
Yeah, we're asking people to just get in behind it and see what happens.
Tune in from the 20th of August.
I'll make a show of myself, don't say.
Well, please do make a show of yourself. That's half the editor. That's half the entertainment. But don't be boring. I don't think you will, because that's often the complaint with punditry. But it has been good in the Olympics. It was a complaint during the Euros. But the Olympics, people showed a lot of heart. Rob Heffernan, Sonia, David Gillick, and Michael, you're the same. You're on duty as well, so we want to hear emotions.
Yeah, 100%.
Have your stepbrother.
Yeah, 100%. But I'm like Peter said, obviously, it's calling spade a spade. I'm talking about performances and talking about good performances, bad performances, and obviously trying to be critical and positive in a lot of ways. But I think it's very important for the nation to see what these sports are and trying to convince them that it's enough to be engaged with them all year round and between the 4 years. And that's the one downfall of kind of all media, is the fact that it goes missing for 3 years before every Paralympic Games. Yeah. But if we can encourage the nation to get behind us, then you just never know. And I think looking at what the likes of Rob Heffernan does and Dervo Rourke and Sonia O'Sullivan, David Gillick, like the amount of praise that David has got, and knowing David personally from my time on Ultimate Hell Week with him, he's a true gentleman and someone that really gets and understands what it is to be an Olympian, because he's been there and done that. And I think that's also another thing, is
has come
when
across,
you know what
elite
sport is, it's easier to engage with people that are going through raw emotion of positivity, of excitement, but also for kind of the sad moments or the unfortunate moments of performance is not going the way
he was brilliant at that particular.
What we're trying to do.
And Michael, of course, you've a baby who's only turning one in September, so you'll be crying the whole way through anyway from that point. Congratulations for little Dunica. Yeah. Peter Ryan, you're recently married too, I believe, so
I
congratulations
to
you. We'll be listening out and watching out. Michael McKillop, thank you so much, and Peter Ryan, thanks a million, and we look forward to the Paralympic Games the 28th of August. We'll just take a quick break.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.